It is now 12 noon here at KPFA 2 o'clock here at KPFA 94.1 FM in Berkeley, 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, 97.5 K248BR in Santa Cruz, and online at kpfa.org. Please stay tuned for Visionary Activist.
Welcome, team. Welcome, allies, at this powerful time, this dark, dark, dark of moon leading us right to the new moon as we convene. So it's a powerful time, this solstice into dark of moon, into new moon. So it's the height of the sun and the dark of the moon. It's about, you know, on stage and backstage. And of course, it hums and resonates the powerful August 21st eclipse that is unfolding on, across our country. It's as though the backstage god said, well, this, America really needs a full-on eclipse. Let's sweep the entire country there. Whoa. It is traditionally the downfall of tyrants. So we want to, at this crossroads, traditionally powerful times, where everything that everyone does matters enormously. And part of our theme, because this is a powerful magic time, is, you know, what is unique to our rogue species aside from our bad manners? And it may be that it is our capacity and responsibility to syncretize, to borrow qualities of plants and animals that we admire, you know, and this powerful time of conjuring. So Ami has Elegba to open the pathway for us. Elegba is the guardian of the crossroads, you know, and think of it this way, that we're all sort of double weighted, you know, standing on 2 feet, you know, even on your little chair. And then as we shift the weight from, you know, to 1 foot, which makes 1 foot Saturn stable and the other foot Uranus free, and we swing, you know, the liberated foot across the threshold of the crossroads, and then we feel around for sturdy purchase, and then when we find sturdy purchase, then that becomes the stable Saturn foot, and we swing the other one through, and we're through! Okay, well, by the end of this evening. So, Ligba.
Ibarago, ago mo yubara, como de comicus barago, ago mo yubara, ele baia solona. Ei, chonchonabe, odara, coronile o babasemi, chonchonabe, odara, coronile o, y chonchonabe, odara. Coronile o baba tenu, chonchona be, elegba, elegba, a yo quere quere meje, elegba, elegba, a la roye y la molle.
Uf. So some of you have been hanging with me for a while, and some of you were like, what? what is this? So for all of us, we have Muti. Muti is from the Sangomas of South Africa. It means power and medicine, reminding us that we don't source power. We invite it. We invite it. You know, and what goes on at the solstices for 20,000 years, it's the earliest form of ritual magic that we're engaged in now with the ancestors behind us. And so it was, oh, literal and metaphoric light of sun, you know, come on in, you know, and illuminate this writing, this painting at the back of the cave. This is the story we want to animate. So again, the modern world's giant, mega, life-threatening kerfuffle is that it's mistaken dominance and control for power. And Pluto would chime in and say, let go of control so power can come on in. So the Muti I have is from late great ally, Stella Coyote. Coyote hair. Ha! Ha!
Oh!
Oh! Syrian tobacco, from when that was also beautiful, and other mysterious herbs and spices. And so we think of our trickster coyote creation myth that says long before there were humans, there was trickster. And trickster sets the whole thing going, choo, with a sizzle of lightning. And that lightning spark of indigenuity, you know, moves through all flora and fauna, you know, and every now and then it's orthodoxed or inquisitioned or constrained, so it becomes a great escape artist. Lewis Hyde says, coyote is lucky if enough con men show up to school her or him, and so we go, we are very lucky. And then it sizzles all the way through flora and fauna, everything into our hearts and bones and blood right now, awaiting this moment where we say, O spirit of liberating trickster, compassionate trickster, residing within each one of us now, awaiting this powerful moment, open the path before everyone here that they may contribute their gifts to the community in a way that is replenishing and the most serious, dedicated fun possible. Okay. So, yes, yeah, so we are gathered this wedding night, when we are lucky enough to have a new moon right after the solstice, you know, it's like, ooh, it's the wedding of all that's been falsely estranged, intellect and heart, science and mysticism, everything wants to come back together, to rejoin the choreography of creation, you know, in the metaphoric garden of conscious kinship. So we're here to do that. So, yeah, so yes, it's true. My great companion, Stella Coyote, her father was a coyote, her mother was a dog. So again, between worlds being. And as we speak of everything tonight, think of it as also part of oneself. You know, we are all ancient beings in a modern world. We're all part wild and part domestic. You know, it's an interesting experiment. So this is the Stella Coyote Memorial Solstice Tour. She approves. So many things I've learned from her that I want to kind of, I vowed to her to tease into all of our hearts, that we may treat her people respectfully. So I don't know what the proper term is. I suppose adopted or engaged or first met Stella Coyote when she was just a puppy, and thought, ooh, okay, it's an experiment. It's going to be a daunting experiment, because at the age of 6 weeks when I went to pick her up, she killed a rabbit in front of me. And it's like, oh, we're in for some surprises here. Whoa. And I love Mary Oliver saying, she has a wonderful poem. You know, I sing in praise of this and that. And it ends with saying, I sing in praise to the coyote that came at me with its strong teeth bared, and then at the last moment, smiled. You know? So it's kind of like that now. It's like, oh no, okay. You know, so here we go. So many things, again, in the underworld, the realm of Stella. Stella was not fond of humans, really, even though no human had been mean to her, but I was always apologizing for what our people had done to her people, and saying that, you know, some of us are trying to be more respectful. And she's like, speed it up, okay? And that quality of, she taught me many things. She taught me the difference between sentimentality and grief. When her best friend, Captain Moondog Wolfie, died or was dying and then died, she loved him more than anything, more than anyone, but not sentimental. And here's where we can feel the difference. When he was dying, she was like, I love you more than anything, but you're dying and I'm going to eat your food. And when he died, again, she grieved but was not sentimental, and it only increased her desire for life. I'm going to live. And we're engaged in, you know, what is the con, the toxic mimic of the authentic thing, you know, and what is the real liberating trick, you know? And so just for our purposes of discernment, we go, you know, grief is authentic and therefore in some deep, deep way liberating. Sentimentality is kind of the toxic mimic that prevents actual grief from taking place. So I think of her as a keeper of democracy in some weird and trippy way. But we are syncretizing as a sacrament. We want to syncretize. I love the compassionate trickster. I can't really say that Stella was extremely compassionate, often viewing me dropping a large, heavy brick on my foot, going, how interesting. And then also, you know, we have bred dogs to no shame, but coyotes know no shame. at all. Only how can I get away with this? So we all get to, we don't want to be completely coyote. We want to be a mix of everything. I like kind of Egypto, Aikido, you know, alchemy. You know, we're all syncretizing from everything that's ever been meaningful to us and all the plants and animals that we admire as well. But the antics of Stella and her humor, because she would smile at the end, and being a between worlds person in the early days, you know, she'd be out in the yard, you know, building her little survival hut, but she also really liked inside because she thought one of the best things about humans was pillows. She's like, you can take the rest of humans, pillows, and sometimes music, but that's really it. So I would go out in the dark of winter, you know, and if I came up to her too fast, without a slow respect, she would go, eh. She would be ancient and snarly and wild, and I'd sit down very calmly and have to enter into ancient time and then go, want to go inside with pillows and food? Yes, okay. You know, so, you know, and then, again, getting away with stuff, not learning a lesson. And, so once she stole an entire cooked chicken, you know, bones, cooked bones very bad for animals, and she was like, oh, I don't feel so good. And I was like, oh, okay, massage. So on day three, she went out to the yard very purposefully, and she dug a triangular pit. She'd never done that before, into which she hurled. Okay. And then she covered it up with her little pointy nose and danced on top of it. And then she drank some of her pee, and she was fine. just keep that in mind as a dynamic possibility in your magic backpack. So I thought, well, maybe she's learned her lesson, right? No. So a couple days later, I was taking a roast chicken out of the oven, and she dove between my hands and took it out into the yard. But she was like, I've learned to chew better now. So we love those things. Also, she taught me that often admiration can trump aggravation. So sometimes she would decide that a door would be convenient for her through a wall, and she would bite her way through the wall and create a door. I created a door. You know, cool. And sometimes she would come in to Moondog the wolf then and say, I've shredded the bed for us. And we're like, oh, no, the bed was already shredded. And then sometimes we would lie down, you know, in bed, and Stella Coyote would go, one more thing to make it perfect, and she'd pee in a circle around us, and we'd go, oh, no, that wasn't actually admiration, that was aggravation. But I love, you know, and the wolf was appalled, going, what heathen have you brought into our midst? This is disgusting. But again, that model of, you know, learning, and part of why I bring up that I live with a part wolf, who is an ancestor now, too, and Stella Coyote, and that I've lived with a coyote for 19 years, longer than I've lived with a human. And I go, sort of like a fairy tale in a weird way. But I know these peoples, these wolf coyote peoples. And part of the beauty of the sky story right now is that Saturn, structure and discipline, and Uranus, wildness and coyote are trined to each other. They're in harmony. These are what's called the ruling planets of Aquarius. Do we have Aquarians here, just for the fun of it? Yes, Aquarians, anthropologists from outer space studying curious Earth customs. Thank you very much. So it's safe to come out now. So part of what I've loved for a long time since hearing this is that on Earth as it is in heaven, so wolves and coyotes are mating as an evolutionary advantage due to the stresses we're putting on everyone. And wolves, they do play every 30 minutes, no matter what, even when they're hunted, even though they must hunt. They do play to keep their intelligence alive, again, important for us. And their wolf criterion of leadership is charisma, which in wolf culture means who initiates play best. It's the wolf that initiates play and engages the ingenuity of the pack that is the alpha. And we go, right, because we want to inhale our Saturn authority from where we might have outsourced it to murderous, vulgar embodiments of American sociopathy. And, you know, and inhale it and then going outside. So because Jupiter is rising in the east now, the quality of blessings and stories, and Jupiter says to each one of us, I will make each one of you wealthy by the power of your dedication and definition this night. So the wolf coyote mix, scientists call them coy wolves. I like to call them wolfotes. And so the evolutionary advantage, you know, wolves very, even though they play, they have a Saturn structure of great responsibility. Everybody's got a job in the pack. Coyotes, not so much. You know, this wild, mad ingenuity. The advantage is to have and contribute to a supportive wolf pack that encourages everyone's unique coyote, right? And since Jupiter says, I'll make you wealthy by your definition of wealth, we go, well, that might be good to have and contribute to a wolf pack that encourages everyone's uniqueness. And that's part of what we can do tonight and through this season, too. Everything wants to be thrown into the cauldron. The divine wants to be liberated from past confines of human imagination. You know, so we throw everything into the cauldron, all spiritual teachings. It only does things good to be thrown into the cauldron, blah, 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 blah. And with the criterion, you know, does it guide people to their own autonomy? Check. Is it equal Mars and Venus? You know, equal men and women? Is it equal humans and the rest of our fellow relations on this planet? Is the trickster welcome? Yes, we ladle it out. No, we throw it back in for another round of bubbling. That's part of our dynamic. I also love, I know some people get grumpy about the dog whisperer going, ah, dog whisperer, I love the dog whisperer. Because we want to be politician whisperers, and these principles can be teased really well. So the dog whisperer would say, you never correct a dog when you're upset. Just take this, tease this into everything, you know, and even effective speech in a hot climate. So you never correct a dog when you're upset, because to dog mind it means you're unstable, and if you're the head of the pack won't survive, so they have to get the car keys from you and take over. So you never correct a dog when you're upset. I like that, because even when Stella Coyote would leap on the stove and take the bubbling pot off the stove in her little mouth, you know, land on the floor splattering two-thirds of the bubbling soup and take the third out to the yard, and it's like, never correct a coyote when you're upset. But again, it's aspirin. It's aspiration. There we go. Another thing from the dog whisperer is that you never use a dog's name for anything but praise and love. And that's a good thing for us to tease also our names. May our names only, you know, you never go, you know, our names are sacred and powerful. Also for our spiritual, political ingenuity. You know, the dog whisperer says, you know, nobody and dogs don't like the word no, no. But hey, to break the trance and then go, hey, over here, over there, who's a good politician? Yes, you are, there we go, who's a good, over here. You know, it's part of the theme also of the trickster dynamic that I love and of Stella Coyote, which is no rules but guidelines. And I've been doing little bits of actual Aikido, I love the philosophy, but in one Aikido class they go, never block an attack, guide it, right? And I did just get back from Egypt in late April. And in Egyptian iconography, if something's in front of you, like a cobra, it's your adversary, which means coming towards you. If something's beside you, it's your ally. If something's in back of you, it's your protector. So again, if something's coming at you, either you guide it, going, Wunda, but you also invite it, you know, as an option to become an ally, and as another option to become a protector, as part of these themes. But so, hey is a crucial dynamic. So we are here at this powerful. Not only is it a new moon after the solstice, or almost new moon, right? This is a time when traditionally, when everyone would gather to determine the course of culture and what story do we want to animate. But for bonus points, June 23rd is the holiest day in New Orleans. It's called High John Eve, when High John the Conqueror, the trickster redeemer of the South, and Marie Laveau, the great voodoo queen, they walk the streets, even in Bolinas. So High John the Conqueror is a great trickster redeemer, and the trickster redeemer, you know, is interested in liberating everyone and the land, and not counting on, but willing to liberate even the tyrant who has hardened their heart. And that's the difference between kind of orthodox hero and trickster hero, which is what we want now, you know, in all of us. So the ancestors are very, you know, cooperators are standing by. So it's good also in this deep, deep time, this dark, dark, dark of the moon time, you know, what are the cooperators standing by? And to honor the ancestors, and Ami has a way of guiding us to do that.
Mm-hmm. So if everyone can just put their hand on their heart, and we're going to make a heartbeat, and you're going to call out the names of your ancestors while I sing this song. Aumba Waori.
waori aumba waori awausuna awauma lerioma leriao bokpoegun kawe bokpoegun kawe bokpoegun kawe.
So to honor New Orleans and something you can take home and do, it's to keep the pathways open between onstage and backstage and the living and the dead. You know, there's a beautiful ritual done often in the morning, but I'll show you now. You just take a cup of beverage, you know, out, a top is useful, because you make a circle with it and a cross within the circle, and you lightly throw it through, and then you pour a little libation, and you go, for the beloved dead, and you see who's there, you know, and these are big mysteries that love, you know, not constraining certainty, but liberating mystery. And because sometimes it's like, oh, Marcelino, you're there at the front of the line again, okay, that's very like you. And you pour a libation for the beloved dead who show up, you know, and then you pour another libation for those whose names are lost in the mists of time, and then another libation for those whose bones and blood lie beneath and upon this earth. And then you raise your cup and you go, we, the living, salute you. Keep this this brewing. So in brewing this and going, you know, who wants to show up and all of that, you know, and the living and the dead, I have some fun partners. It's also to think of who do you want to partner with as unlikely kind of allies. I couldn't help but notice that Pope Francis and Philip K. Dick are born on the same day. And I go, I think that's a fun syncretization, right? And Bernie Sanders and Marie Laveau within a day. And we go, that's good too, you know. And so to imagine, you know, the kind of ancestors syncretizing, you know, in back of us. So I also was remembering, you know, thinking of this beautiful, you know, small but hugely hearted being, Sella Coyote, who died on June 12th after 19 years, right? So we had a great run. I was remembering Lauren Isley talking about Odysseus and his dog Argos, because at the end of the Odyssey, it's the dog Argos that is the only one that recognizes Odysseus when he gets home. So, but I just ran across the treasure trove of Lauren Isley, and I want to invite him as a beautiful ally, as a beautiful wedding of biology, science, and kinship, you know, dedicated to that. Because part of the re-wedding of what's been falsely estranged is that, you know, science and knowledge and mysticism were very happy together. Science and fairy tales and myths, cultures embedded symbolically their scientific knowledge in fairy tales and myths. You know, the Inanna myth is the Venus orbital cycle. There's a great essay by William Irwin Thompson on the fairy tale Rapunzel, in which he teases from it the entire biological history of the Earth, the orbital cycle of the Moon, Mars, and Venus, and sex and death, and I mean, and more. And it really is in there. Wow. So when the Enlightenment, alleged Enlightenment, came along, the unsupervised Mars team said, we don't need these symbolic languages like astrology, or fairy tales, or myth. We want just knowledge, just knowledge. And so what it did is it stripped knowledge from its moral, mythological compass guideline, that all knowledge be used with an understanding and a dedication that it benefit the entire collective world. And we go, ah. So Lauren Isley is great. He says, while wandering a deserted beach at dawn, stagnant in my work, I saw a man in the distance bending and throwing as he walked the endless stretch toward me. As he came near, I could see that he was throwing starfish, abandoned on the sand by the tide, back into the sea. When he was close enough, I asked him why he was working so hard at this strange task. He said that the sun would dry the starfish and they would die. I said to him I thought he was foolish. There were thousands of starfish on miles and miles of beach. One man alone could never make a difference. He smiled as he picked up the next starfish, hurling it far into the sea. He said, it makes a difference for this one. I abandoned my writing and spent the morning throwing starfish. And I love that. Again, you know, in one is many. In one, Sella Coyote is all coyote people. And how I got, you know, just Stand Up Coyote as a moniker and also Coyote Network News is when I was out shortly after I'd adopted Stella, she was a puppy and she liked going inside, but she didn't trust people or the house sitter, so she wouldn't come in. And I was walking on Point Reyes on the beach, and a coyote came up quite close, and I go, "Hello, I live with one of your people." And it's like, "Yeah, whatever." But right exactly at that moment, on the other coast, Stella Coyote trotted into the house. And I go, "It is all telepathic communication. It is all this." And a friend of mine, living in Providence, Rhode Island, spent a year getting one elephant in the zoo freed, right? Mm. One being. This elephant had been chained in the zoo for 30 years with manacles on and a small little container. It hadn't seen another elephant for 30 years since all of its relatives had been killed when it was captured. And she worked at it for a year. She got it liberated. She went with it to a Texas sanctuary. It hadn't seen another elephant in 30 years. They let it out. There was another elephant there in the lake. They ran towards each other trumpeting, and then they ran into the lake splashing. And we go, never too late to have a good time.
Yes.
Never too late to have a good time.
Yes.
You know, and again, the micro to the macro. You know, kindness done to one is good for the entire collective. So Lauren Isley also says, perhaps the creature of so much ingenuity and deep memory is almost bound to grow alienated from his world, his fellows, and the objects around him. He suffers from a nostalgia for which there is no remedy upon earth except as it is to be found in the enlightenment of the spirit. Some ability to have a perception, a perceptive rather than an exploitive relationship with his fellow creatures. So one of the deals with of Stella Coyote is that, again, dogs know shame, coyotes know, all telepathy, all wheel and deal. You know, very New Orleans, very voodoon, you know, what anthropologists call transactional spirituality. You know, I give you this, how about this, whatever. And I love this because, you know, two things that I keep with me is when I'd first met Stella, I hosted a Lakota elder on the radio. And we were talking about coyotes, and he goes, nothing more smart and ingenious and revered. And he said, you know, we Lakota didn't hunt alone. So often, those gifted at trance would go into a reverie and broker a deal with the wolves and coyotes, and we would all hunt together for a season.
Mm.
And if you want to destroy a culture, destroy its capacity for respectful collaboration across borders, engaging in trance. I love that. And at the same time, what I syncretize with that is a wonderful friend, Robinette Kennedy, who's wonderfully spicy, she who said, what if the idea of matriarchy is a patriarchal concept? which is fun, as opposed to actual equality, which would look like a matriarchy because we're so whacked out. So I loved syncretizing those things. And she also then said, you know, the modern concept of worship is so infantile. You know, you are great, now give me this thing. And she said, in hunter-gatherer society and throughout the Mediterranean, she lives in Crete half the year and rural Georgia half the year because we're all experiments. She said there was great reverence and respect between the backstage invisible, very present now, and the onstage visible. But she said, but it was a much more collaborative relationship, that the backstage invisible spiritual world seeks incarnational invitation as much as we seek communion with it. And I go, I love this. Mm-hmm. And I love wedding these things as well. You know, as long as we have a hierarchical spirituality, we're going to get Donald Trump. You know, so it's, again, withdrawing our complicity on every kind of level and this idea of, you know, collaboration. And again, that's the solstice, inviting in. But with Stella Coyote, again, it was all telepathy. And I tell some of these stories a lot, but they're here. So when she first arrived, again, aside from doing many frightening and terrible things, she also did another ritual. You know, what is distinct from us and animals? So little. So every night at 2 a.m., she would gather things from around the house, rocks, underwear, I mean, everything, and put them in a circle. And then she would throw them in the air and kill them. She would animate them and kill them sequentially. And then she'd run around and bite me and the wolf dog. And the wolf dog was like, what the hell? So I would put my forehead to hers, because she really liked that, and say, okay, I can see you're a great artist of destruction and creation. So here's our deal. Wheel and deal. Here's our deal. I will guarantee you art supplies. And you will have Moondog, and you will, you know, my job is to keep you safe and great food. And in return, we will exchange, you know, may it be of mutual benefit. We give up something and we gain something from our adventure. So you don't need to do this bitey thing anymore. And so she didn't. She did many other terrible things, but she never did that thing. And it's like, all right. I love a friend of mine said that the best horse trainers were gypsies and Irish, because they would always send the horse a picture. And whenever I would return home, entheogenically enhanced, which was fairly frequently lately, Stella Coyote would go, now you're in my world. You know, now we're in this kinship realm, these sacraments of kinship, whatever opens us up to kinship, because it's all imagery. You know, and I also love what the dog whisperer had to say, because with the wolf and the coyote on leash, especially very aggressive, I'm going to kill you. So if we saw a dog or even sometimes another human, they go, and I would pull them to one side and they go, and the dog whisperer said, avoid nothing. Avoid nothing. And animals see what is in our minds. So when you see like, oh no, I hope they don't do ar-ar-ar, that's what they do. And this is also important to tease these experimental playfulnesses into our realm of engaging in collective politics and everything as well. And so what the dog whisperer said is only set a line of where you're going. Avoid nothing and go straight through anything. You know, and just set that magnetic thing. And it worked. It was like, we're going right there, even though there's spaceships landing, you know, with cats on them, even though we're just going right there. We're just going right there. And again, we're all gathering and syncretizing everything we've ever learned from diverse things. When I was in the Yucatan once at a kind of, you know, waiting for airplane at a conventional hotel, there was a pool with a slippery log on it, and nobody could quite, you know, walk across the log to the other side. And there was a Mayan guy right on the other side, and he just gestured to me, going, don't look down, only look at where you're going. And I did, and I walked all the way across the thing, and it was amazing. So again, you know, part of our skill set, too, which is, you know, we are here to not be snookered into polarity. You know, but again, to look where we're going, you know, but also to spiral the Aikido, you know, no blocking, but guiding over there, you know. And may it be also with Jupiter rising in the east that we all become really skilled at invitational storycraft. It's like, hey, not that, but over here, which is especially important with this relentless war on life that is happening all around us, so cruel. But it is that idea of, you know, as the razzle-dazzle swindle becomes increasingly apparent, many people looking for a guiding story. So we've got to go here, over here, you know, that, you know, this is what's going down, here's what's coming up, you know, come on over here to sane reverence. Standing Rock was great that way, because they sent out the story invitation going, if you're a libertarian, this is about non-eminent domain, if you're whatever the thing is, here's where we go, and this is about manners. And also their wise changing of the word protester to protector, a good upgrade. Because protester means to grab your balls. I mean, that's literally what it means. It means to grab your balls and affirm something, pro, you know, for, and testes from Leviticus. So protector, really good. Right now, you know, the sun and moon are in Cancer. The moon is moving closer and closer again while we're convening right now. Mercury is in Cancer. Mars is in Cancer. Mars is at 12 degrees Cancer, which is where the sun was when this country was founded on July 4th, 1776. Mm-hmm. So we can spiral. Dion Fortune said the purpose of ritual magic is to spiral blessings and expanded wisdom and tolerance into collective mind. And so there's a lot of resonance right now. We go Mars, right on the U.S. sun. Mars in the underworld, meaning we don't see Mars anymore. Mars is in the underworld remembering what it is to be a hero. And it's in the realm of Cancer, which is the hero is he or she who protects life. And it is right on top of the U.S. The U.S. Jupiter. So it's like, okay, in the memosphere, spiraling things out there into the memosphere. Many, many ways to be effective. You know, and if Jupiter in Libra says, you know, I will make you wealthy, and what do you want to feel like, and what do you want to feel like to others, you know, consider, which means with the stars, if we would all like to be influential, irresistibly influential, you know, hey, come this way, here we go. So, which is, see, the difference from finger wagging, which we'll get to because we get to throw things into the cauldron, you know, which is a blocking thing. And remember, Ursula Le Guin says, we strengthen whatever we resist. Right? Because resistance is always against. And I think resistance is a good beginner word, but we want to keep moving, right? Because there's no prison for the unexpected. You want to keep moving. So resistance, yeah, like anger is good as a start, but then you want to cook it into desire. So you're angry about this. What do you want? You know, is that that dynamic? So Lauren Isley says, one does not meet oneself until one catches the reflection from an eye other than human. Right? We need all these beings. You know, the gaze of a whale moves everyone to incredible, like, oh my God. You know, the gaze of a coyote, the gaze of this is food. And just a little bit of coyote etiquette that I've learned from Stella. Squealing is not recommended if you meet a pack of coyotes. Eek, eek, because they're like, we will help your race by eliminating you. eek, eek. And little wimpy things, you know, so often at Bioneers Conference, bless their hearts, you know, I love them very much, in case they're listening. But often there's something wonderful, and people go, woo, woo, and Stella goes, I eat those people. Yeah, it's like, arr. The eye, the gazing, this is all food and nutrient. You know, planets, this new moon in Cancer is all about what nourishes us and how do we nourish others. And our word culture, if we look it up in a dictionary, the first 3, 4, 5 definitions are all what do we grow, what do we plant, and then even in a petri dish. And then way down by analogy is culture. What do we metaphorically encourage and grow in our metaphoric gardens as well as our literal ones? The squealing, no. Lauren Isley says, if there's magic on this planet, it's contained in water. We go, ooh. So here we are near water. Again, solstice is where Legba hands the baton to Yemaya, Big Mama. Big Mama, water, water, the waters of the sea. Associate also with Neptune, dreams and vision. We go, well, what species would pollute the collective water supply? For as long as we've had imagination, human imagination has been tied to the ocean. And so it says, well, a species that had forgotten its mythology of conscious kinship. So only the healing of imagination can allow us to heal the ocean, and only the healing of the ocean can allow us to heal our imaginations. We go, ah. So every time, this is Lauren Isley, every time we walk along a beach, some ancient urge disturbs us so that we find ourselves shedding shoes and garments or scavenging among seaweed and whitened timbers like the homesick refugees of a long war. Mm. And just a late ancestor, Jim Lewis, great astrological ally, wrote a book on Ulysses and America. And when Ulysses is sailing for home, and the Odyssey is a manual for how you take veterans home, it takes 12 years. You know, it takes 12 years to return from war on every kind of level. Mm-hmm. But Ulysses keeps getting thrown off course, and he's like, "Oh!" Finally, Tiresias, the blind prophet in the underworld, explains it to him and says, "You have offended Neptune, the god of the sea. You blinded his son, the Cyclops. So here's what you have to do. You have to take an oar, a symbol of the sea, and walk it inland to where nobody's ever seen the sea before. And this is Greece, right? So you have to walk a long way. And there, build a temple to the god who's been oppressing you," which is an interesting clue, right? So he does. He takes an oar, a symbol of the sea, walks it inland, and somebody says, "Is that a piece of a windmill?" He goes, "This is the spot." And he builds a temple to the god who's been oppressing him, Neptune, and it works. Again, Neptune dreams, vision, water. Water reflects a reverse image. You know, your adversary can become your protector. And by building a temple to the god who's been oppressing him, it works. And Neptune sends him sweet winds, and he sails for home. So that's just something, again, to ponder as a mystery, going, what would it mean in my own life to build a temple to the god who's been oppressing me? You know, and to turn the adversary into an ally. What would that mean? And in the imaginative realms, you know, the backstage realms are such a useful and fruitful place to play. It's as though, you know, we all have our magic skills, and sometimes we notice growing up that people don't, so we tie one hand behind our back and then forget and go, God, life is really hard with one arm. And then we go, wait a minute, I have another arm. It's my magic arm, full of many potencies, the wheel and deal, you know, negotiate backstage, which is a powerful place. We call backstage the green room. It comes from Greek theater because it was sacred to Dionysus, the green man. So every actor, regardless of their role on stage, would, before they went on, dedicate themselves to the flora and fauna of this earth. And that's why we call it the green room, even though it's usually beige these days. But it's that theme in all of us of tracking everything back to its originating, liberating impulse of meaning before it got hoodwinked you know, and bamboozled and snookered. What did this want to be? This person, this event, this thing, this green room. What did it want to be? How do we track it back? That's why language, Legba's realm, is also part of our magic skills. You know, I'm always doing etymology, and I love meeting other word mavens. And recently somebody said, the etymology of the word charisma. And I go, ooh, oh, what? She goes, well, it comes from charis, from which we get Eucharist and charity and cur, heart, and in Shakespeare, Cordelia, dedicated heart. So true charisma is a charitable heart. We go, ah, it's not the swagger, right? So we love that. The journey is difficult, says Lauren Isley, immense. We will travel as far as we can, but we cannot in one lifetime see all that we would like to see or learn all that we hunger to know. You know, again, just the honor of breathing, of being alive, and curiosity. You know, and Jupiter would encourage us all as well in this quality of generosity. And Jupiter says, what is the one way of relating to the world and everything in it that is guaranteed replenishing and never depleting? And Jupiter says, blessing. You know, may it go well for you. And it can be fierce blessing. We're allowed to set in motion anything of which we would be the happy recipients. So we check on that. You know, and we go, you know, may it be that all humans have an increasing empathic experience of the effect of their actions on others. We go, ooh, every styrofoam cup, every plastic thing, are we willing to do that? You know, and we might want to lead us in ashe.
Yeah, let's do that.
Ashe. Right. So
come
just,
on.
Yeah. So if you're up for that, you just follow Ami by saying ashe. Yeah?
That's right. Ashe.
Ashe.
That's it.
Ashe, which is a powerful word. It means may the word be manifest so, you know, and this is a powerful time, so why fool around? Yeah.
Ashe.
Exactly. Yay. Exactly. And feel free, you know, Jack. If it should turn out, says Lauren, that we have mishandled our own lives as several civilizations before us have done, it seems a pity that we should involve the violet and the tree frog in our departure. Right.
Ashe.
Though men in the mass forget the origins of their needs, they still bring wolfhounds into city apartments where dog and man sit brooding in wistful discomfort. Right. The magic that gleams an instant between Argos, the dog, and Odysseus is both the recognition of diversity and the need for affection across the illusions of form. It is nature's cry to homeless, far-wandering, insatiable man. Do not forget your brethren, nor the green wood from which you sprang. To do so is to invite disaster.
Ashe for real, ashe. Right there, yeah.
And when men become greater than nature, nature which gave us birth will respond, right? So we know that, you know, in nature, when conflicting forces come together, nature creates a spiral to resolve it. You know, why meteorological friends of mine, when I say, what do hurricanes want? He says, they want what we all want. They want peace. They're taking, you know, conflicting forces and trying to move them to the North Pole. So the increasing storms that we have, and we're heading into more, are speaking to us as everything is, you know, that of the enormous imbalance of what we've set forth. But also just, you know, we believe nothing, we entertain possibilities. Late great ancestor Marcelino Santero remembers when he was in Cuba with his Santero grandmother. She was making tea for him and cookies, and out the window he saw a tornado forming. And she just, you know, was making tea and cookies, and she just took scissors and went snip, snip, and he saw the tornado dissipate. Right? We go, no, it takes more than a weekend workshop to do that. But just keep it in mind. Experiment.
Nice. I got to remember that one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right. We are, and then Lauren, actually, the last beautiful thing. We are rag dolls made out of many ages and skins. Changelings who have slept in wood nests or hissed in the uncouth guise of waddling amphibians. We have played such roles for infinitely longer than we have been men. Our identity is a dream. We are process, not reality. For reality is an illusion of the daylight, the light of our particular day.
Ashe. So,
thank you. Thank you, beautiful Lauren Isley. So Voodoo and transactional spirituality, I mean, I love this. It's not I mean, we love everything, you know, and everybody according to their affinity. Animism is not really about Buddhist transcendence. When can we leave this veil of tears and, you know, step off, or even if it's Hinayana Hanki, personal salvation. It's more incarnational sensuality, and it is this wheel and deal. Like, again, Stella was really good at this. Wheel and deal. She would steal two leather gloves and then sometimes drop one in front of us going, what are you offering for the other one, right? So we go, how about some pate? She goes, only one? And you go, all right, two, or three, okay. And she'd bring the other glove back, you know. And also, you know, since we have a relentless war on life going on, you know, what are positive qualities of relentless? Stella was relentless. Give me that. Just. And the only creature I ever saw defeat her, meaning she didn't kill it, was a praying mantis. Kung Fu praying mantis thing. She came up to it and it did its Kung Fu thing. And see, coyotes also come around from the back, right? And they nip your little ankles. And that's why dogs know that coyotes are not dogs. Right? This is not in the dog handbook, this creeping around and biting ankles. But Stella couldn't get behind it. Again, think of this, our spiraling Aikido. She couldn't get behind it. You know, for like a half hour, she tried to kill this thing, and it was doing its thing. And then she actually bowed and trotted off, right? And it's like, she was like, you'll be cool.
So
keep that dynamic as well. Yeah, so this wheel and deal, again, backstage, you know, may all of our relations with every dog, with every human, with every plant be one of reciprocal blessing. May it go well for you. May it go well for you. We give up this, we get that. And with Stella, because she lived 19, and people would often say, how long do coyotes live? And I go, how long did your grandparents live? That's a kind of rude question, which is a little unfair of me. But we've never had a coyote so loved and also so offered free range. She loved coconut water as well as, you know. And in the last days, she was particularly fond of chia seed pudding. She was like, give me another chia seed pudding, you know. And so when she got her diagnosis in November, the vet said she's going to die, you know, in a day or two, right? Because she had a tumor that had fractured her shoulder. And he said it's not operable and the pain will be terrible and, you know, just tell us when to give her a shot. But, you know, Stella, it's like we don't have to accept anything, right? I love friend Pat Spears, great Native American leader, was dying on the Lakota Reservation, and the doctors gave him like 2 months to live. And his great friend Bob Goff said, Pat, as long as I've known you, you've never been on time for anything. You know, why start now? And he was like, yeah. And he got, so with Stella, I go, well, part of our deal is I've never, you know, been imposing constraining certainty on liberating mystery. What do you want? Autonomy is a sacrament as much as is possible. You know, and so she didn't like the painkiller drugs at all. She was like, this wipes me out and separates me from my spirit. So I go, well, what do I have here in this drawer? Some really heavy-duty medical cannabis. She's like, yeah, let's go for that. And it took a while to get the dosage right because I go, oh, how are you doing? I'm, are you dying or stoned? She's like, I'm really stoned. Sorry about that. So I was just cooking organic buffalo with sweet potatoes and broccoli, and she's like, yeah, and medical cannabis and turmeric, and you know, and I really loved ministering. It was a sweet part of our lives, and she got really, you know, she got 6 months of really good play out of it, and a lot of things happened, which reminds us, what happens when we have a safe old age? And what I got to say to her was, our deal is paying off. You know, at the beginning, we both gave up a lot. She would have wanted to run 60 miles, but I had to keep her safe from the authorities. And she loved to escape and to stay just out of reach, going, you know, come here, you little... So, but the safe old age, you know, is a great evolutionary assist, because all kinds of qualities of intelligence began to unfold in her that were unique. You know, and again, what happens with a safe old age? She got more psychic. Some of her senses diminished, other ones really opened up. She invented restorative yoga. It was very very adorable. She would leap under the bed for really right up until the last days, and she'd put a little pillow under her leg and a little pillow under her head and one under there. And I go, that is so cute. And she'd go, She liked to and then laugh. She liked to creep up behind people sitting in a group and just snip any strap that she could find, their sandals, remove straps from their purses, and then back away and just watch the fun when people were like, what has happened that amused her a lot? Coyote humor. So it was all wheel and deal, you know, and again, for all of us to go, you know, it's like when I spent summer a million years ago. Well, the summer that Nixon was impeached. Yeah, I was at Findhorn. Remember, as Mark Twain says, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. And I do love from that era. Great bumper sticker that said "Impeach the cocksucker," and so we go the Archibald Capps. But I was at Findhorn when Nixon was impeached and living with the gardeners and the beekeepers. And so I go, well, what do the bees get out of this? And they go, well, nature is very harsh, especially in the north of Scotland. And sometimes in nature, you know, bees don't make enough to survive. So we cut a deal with them. You know, we take their excess, but we guarantee that they will have safety and always have enough to get through. And the bees were cool with that, you know. And they walked in without nets or, I mean, anything. And so it's all like, what do I get from this? And how do I get from this? This transactional spirituality. So I think it's time for Witch Doctor. Just to kind of honor the voodoo, spicy, you know, creative, disobedient, surprising magic that is within us all.
And, you know, this was actually a song. I don't know if I told you this part. That my family, we did our first trip to Trinidad and Tobago, and there was this singer named Sparrow, which is perfect for today. And he would sing this song, and the first time I heard it, I was like, that's what I am. I'm a witch doctor. I had no idea. So this is the song. Hey, they call me the witch doctor from a land afar, specialize in Obia. My real name is Papagua. As the drums begin to play and me ring me bell, everybody clear the way, me casting me spell. And hear me singing now, Roger, come here, Roger, Roger, unumbadanda. Ine, ine, unawa, ine, abracadabra. The fire blazing and the water hot. Oh Lord, it is time to put something in the pot. A little bit of mud, an eagle's claw, donkey's blood and a rabbit's paw. One black hen, piece of golden thread, a piece of hair from a dead man's head. And who do me wrong? Him get the biggest sore foot in town. And him is singing out, Roger, come here, Roger, Roger, umbadanda. Ine, ine, unawa, ine, abracadabra. The fire blazing and the water hot. Oh, Lord. It's time to put something in the pot. Woo!
Yeah, so not time to put some tea in the pot. Is that the last line?
Put some tea in the pot.
I think, the dangerous times call for experimentation. You know, and the word nice comes from Nessian, which means ignorant. Right? That's the end. So just, you know, words are, we can still use it, but we want to know what we're saying, you know. So it's not about being, it's about being kind, but not necessarily nice, right? So here's a little spiciness. And again, you know, there's no prison for the unexpected. So this idea of trickster medicine is the keeper of democracy. And the creator of a cord, you know, I say this a lot, but here it is again, you know, because it's so useful. I go to the underworld, I went to the Republican Convention, I went to the Democratic Convention, underworlds of a kind, many useful things. But see, if we use our harumphitude composter, which we all have, it's under your chair, you can take it away with you, it's invisible, and it folds up to nothing, but you can pull it out at any time, because communication and story are only useful after we've composted our harumphitude. Because otherwise, you know, it's like when Scorpios or Scorpio Rising say, you know, I was very nice to that person and they flipped out. We go, no, there's more going on. I was very nice to that person inside. I was going, you dingbat. You know, and everybody gets everything, right? So if you're nice, like, hi, how are you? We're all complicitously directing the movie. And as a, you know, I wonder why I would have directed the movie that way. So So this idea of, composting her own food, very important. And it's a way of not getting snookered into polarity, which is one of our crucial skills, to be storytellers, to be influential, to be agents of liberating. At CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference, where I went to meet all the Dementors, are there allies available? And remember, whatever we speak to in another is the part of them we're inviting to dance with the corresponding part of ourselves, right? So the reason we want to discern but not judge, which is imprisoning, is that when we judge, we're inviting the least evolved part of somebody to dance with the least evolved part of us. Never pretty, right? So these are all aspirational, experimental guidelines to play with and to practice and to kind of take away. So I saw these Ayn Rand right-wing economists, some from Austria, and I was like, and it's like Krumpfertube Composter. And they really were. They were following their Austrian leader, who really had like a black eye patch, and he really looked central casting. Everything is like central casting now. But I composted Krumpfertube, and they came up to me, and I really look like I look all the time, pretty much. And they were like, "You, who are you?" And I said, "I'm Coyote Network News. I'm a mythological news service for the trickster redeemer within us all." Yes. And they said, "That is so cool." Right? So now we're in Woof Woof Wanna Play. If I'd said I'm an environmentalist, feminist, the astrologer, no. Right, but see, the unexpected, let us all, we're in the feeling Cancerian beginning of summer realm, the feeling is all crucial, and we want to move our emotional default setting to woof woof want to play. And if somebody doesn't want to play, we keep going, we keep spiraling, right? And if we take offense that somebody doesn't want to play, it wasn't really an offering. Is our manner of relating an offering serves liberation, or an imposition serves tyranny, no matter what label we stick on our butts? And so again, to react to anything is not free. Or to cultivate an ever-expanding repertoire of responses, is to be allied with nature's evolutionary ingenuity. And that's why, again, in all tense situations, we want to be, may everyone here be a liberating trickster. My colleague, Verbin Supreme, who runs for office every now and then as a satirical candidate, was good, and then not so good, but, because you have to really be authentic to pull it off. But in Cleveland, he was great because he said, protesters or protectors, really, but cops on bicycles coming to pen them in. And he goes, you got to disrupt fear, because fear always plays into tyranny. So as the cops started to corral the protectors, Verbin grabs the microphone and says to the cops, "Remember to do it like we rehearsed it, lads," which sowed some confusion in everyone, right? So again, it disrupts all it takes is one disruption of the story and it liberates everybody, and then you begin to go, "You cops on the left, your bicycles are not in order," and they began to be, now they were third graders in school, they were like, oh. And then when it got tense at another time, he had the crowd chant, "Give the cops a raise, give the cops."
Spectacular.
It's really, keep all these things and make up your own, and see, it's the backstage dedication. So when things are hot right there, you have things already there, and we're also spiraling them into the memosphere. So unexpected is available, to liberate everybody. So, and then when the Westboro Baptist Church was there going, "You're all sodomites and sinners and drug addicts." And Verbin said, "Those are my voters." And it cracked the cops up as well, again, laughter, disruption, disrupting the narrative. Again, it's very trickster, it's very coyote to do that. And that's why also in Cleveland, meeting people that one would normally, like, "Oh, Trump voters," and then going, "Oh." So talking to
charge up your afternoon with hip-hop and social justice talk on Hard Knock Radio at 4. followed by frontline investigative news on Flashpoints at 5, and get a comprehensive wrap-up of the day's events on the Pacifica Evening News at 6. All starting today on KPFA, where we stay vigilant as always.
Oh, yeah. Hello, guys.
Make a smart investment. Support KPFA Radio today. We make the most of every dollar donated by producing truly independent news, analysis, cultural, and public affairs programming. You are essential in keeping that information flowing and KPFA on the air. Invest today. Become a member or an ally as a monthly sustainer. Online.